Hello. Welcome back to the last oral session, which is called Interpretable Models. And we're going to have the first speaker is going to talk about interpretable distribution features with maximum testing power. And the speaker is Witawat Hitkitrum. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the introduction. My name is Witawat. I'm from the Gatsby Unit, University College London. And today, I would like to tell you about our new method to extract features for distinguishing two distributions, okay? Here's the problem setup. We have two collections of samples, X and Y, from two unknown distributions, P and Q. For example, the set X might contain faces showing positive emotions, and the set Y might contain, say, faces showing negative emotions. And our goal is to learn distinguishing features that indicate how P and Q differ. Now, what do I mean by distinguishing features? When I say these distinguishing features, I mean from the two collections shown at the top, we want to produce a new point indicating where to look for the differences. What you see at the bottom here is a learned, generated new data point. This is not a terminator, as someone said yesterday, actually. This is a new generated face. And you can see that the relevant regions carry high weights, as shown in bright color. That means if you want to check the differences of the two sets, you should check the nose, lips, or smile lines areas. And this is what I mean by distinguishing feature. Okay. So to explain how we do this, I would like to simplify the problem and focus on only one-dimensional problem for now. And then we will come back to this phase problem later. OK, let me start by asking a motivating question. So where is the best location along the horizontal axis to observe the difference of the two distributions, P and Q? Here, P is a uniform distribution. This is one dimension, okay? And Q is a bimodal distribution. Now, you have two choices, either the one on the left mode, or the right, okay? Now, the key here is that in both cases, the gap in the densities is the same, okay? Now keep in mind that in practice, we don't have access to this kind of density functions, but you do have access to only samples, like so. And so why do we want this best location? Because it will turn out that this best location that we seek is exactly the distinguishing feature that I want to find, okay? Now, as I explain along, you will learn the answer by yourself, like which one is better. So in this work, we propose a linear time algorithm to find such data-driven features. And linear time, I mean linear with respect to the sample size or the number of points. Okay. One more thing that I need to emphasize is that when I say a feature, I do not mean one dimension of my data input. I mean really one new data point. Okay. So to start explaining the statistic that we use, I would like to start by explaining the so-called witness function. This is part of our statistic that we will use to determine the best location. Okay, this is half of the story. Okay, let me simplify the one-dimensional problem earlier further by considering only 3 points for each distribution. This is the same problem as before, but 3 points, okay? Here, the set X contains 3 points, shown on the left, and the set Y contains 3 points. Covering two modes, okay? The first step that we will do is we are going to put a Gaussian kernel centered at each point, like here. Keep in mind that these are functions. Now, the next step would be we are going to take the average of all the blue bumps, okay? When I take the average, I will get a new function like this. This blue curve that you see, this is a new function, and it is called the empirical mean embedding of the distribution P. And this is denoted by mu hat P, as a function of v. So v is the horizontal axis, and each v corresponds to one possible feature. Okay. Now, let me go back. I can do the same for y. I can take the average of all the red bumps, and then I will get the mean embedding for q. Okay, as shown here, this is denoted by mu hat q. So you can think of the mean embedding as a representative of the distribution. And in this case, remember that we want to find where the two distributions differ. So why don't we take the difference of the two then? So let me take blue minus red, okay? Then I'll get this black curve. This black curve has a name. It's called the witness function, because it's so-called because it witnesses the differences of P and Q. So from here, because I do not care about the sign of the witness, I care only about the magnitude of the difference, what I can do is, for convenience, I can square the witness, like so, to get this squared witness function. Now, up to this point, some of you might think, okay, since I already get this squared witness function, why don't I just maximize this, okay? Find the feature by maximizing this squared witness function and set that V star, the point that achieves the maximum, as my best feature. But then the question is it really the best we can do? Is it really optimal? And the answer is no, not for our purpose. And let me show you why. Okay, here's one failure mode of this approach. To show you this, I would like to increase the sample size just to eliminate all the sampling noise. Okay, now n is 50, 500. And 5,000, as you can see, the witness function gets smoother and smoother. And in the end, we get the population witness function, or squared witness function. And here I plot the squared witness alongside with the two distributions, P and Q. And as you can see that the witness function has two peaks, one on the left and on the right, and they are of the same height, meaning that if you maximize this witness function, you will not get a unique solution. And the reason for this is that this squared witness function only cares about the signal. And by signal, I mean the gap in the two density functions. Okay, as you can see, they have the same gap on both sides. That's why you have the same peak. Now, what we should do is we should take into account the variance or the noise or the variability at each feature as well, not just the signal. Okay, and this is exactly what we will do. We will take into account the variance at each feature and incorporate it into our objective. And let me introduce the variance. Okay, the statistic that we use, or the objective that we use to choose the feature, is called the ME statistic, ME for mean embeddings. And it is exactly what I told you, which is it takes into account the variance of the feature V. So the total variance of V is given by the variance of V from X and the variance of V from Y. Okay, we have two sources of randomness. Okay, once we can compute this variance, we can form the ME statistic denoted by lambda hat, okay, still a function of V, some feature, by dividing the squared witness function by this variance. So essentially, instead of considering just the signal, we consider a signal-to-noise ratio. Okay, just essentially. Okay, here's the same plot. Let's see some plot. Okay, here's the same plot as before. Now let me show you the variance. The first term, the variance of V from X. This is what it looks like. Now, let me show the variance from Y. The second term. This is what it looks like. So, unlike the variance from X, this one, the variance from Y is present on both modes, okay? And simply because the distribution Q is bimodal, it covers both sides. Now, when we compute a total variance, we need to sum the two, this and this, and therefore, the total variance is a bit thicker on the left. Now, to form my ME test statistic, I would need to divide the square witness function, which is the black curve here, right, by this total variance. Now you can guess what happens when you divide by a larger number. So it gets lower. The left side gets lower. And therefore, once we have this ME test statistic, we can maximize it to find our best feature. And it is on the right. Okay. And intuitively, why is it that the right-hand side is better? Very vaguely, you can see that the signal is the same, so the gap in the density is the same, but the left-hand side is kind of more crowded, right? The right-hand side is very clear. There's no presence of the blue points, so that's why. And this variance term exactly takes this into account. Okay. Now let's see some properties of the statistic. We can actually use the statistic to conduct a two-sample test, proposing a null hypothesis H0, saying that the two distributions are the same, P is equal to Q, against the alternative that they are different. And we can also use more than one feature, say I can actually use J features as well, but I omitted the details for simplicity. And we have a theoretical result showing that choosing the best J features by maximizing the lambda hat that you just saw will increase a lower bound on the test power. And finally, the whole procedure, the testing part and the optimization part, is linear time. It's linear with respect to the sample size, which is very fast. That's the end of the method part. So let's see some applications, okay? This is the same problem that I showed you earlier. So the goal here, we have two goals here. The first one is to conduct a two-sample test. We want to test whether they are the same distribution or not, these positive emotions and negative emotions. I know that they are not. We construct it to be that way. And the second goal is if they differ, where, okay, how and where. And let me show you the two-sample test result first. Here I'm plotting the test power or rejection rate. The higher, the better, because in this case, we should reject the null hypothesis. They are different. And this green bar here, this is the ME test statistic, but without doing any optimization, I essentially use random features. And so as you can see that the power is about 60%, 65, meaning that it can distinguish the two sets only about 65% of the time, where in our proposed method, if you do the optimization, we can distinguish the two sets almost all the time. And this performance is comparable to the state-of-the-art MMD test, which runs in quadratic time. But our one runs in linear time. Now, as promised, you have already seen this, which is that our method also extracts a meaningful feature. This picture shown on the right. Let me put a mask. So just to repeat, this learned feature is telling us that the relevant parts to look for the difference are nose, lips, and smile lines, and so on. So let us see one more application. In this case, we are in text domain, and each point is actually a NIPS paper. We collected NIPS papers from 1988, and we consider papers from two categories. The first one is a paper on Bayesian inference, and second one is second set consists of papers on deep learning, and the goal is to distinguish the two sets and also find how they differ. And each paper is represented by a bag of 2,000 nouns, that is, each data point is in 2,000 dimensional space. And we use TF-IDF representation. Here's the same plot. The test power, the higher, the better. Again, without any optimization, the ME statistic doesn't perform well. The power is extremely low. So when you see this, you might think, OK, perhaps, I mean, deep learning papers use a lot of Bayesian inference techniques, and therefore it is difficult to distinguish the two. But well, with optimization, we can distinguish the two sets at about 95% of the time. And again, this is comparable to the state-of-the-art MMD test, which runs in quadratic time. And to recall, again, we can learn an informative feature. Just to recall that a feature is a new generated point. In this case, a point is a document or a paper, and therefore I can examine that learned document to see which words occur most frequently, and I see this kind of words, okay, like for example infer, Bayesian, Bayes, Monte Carlo, and so on. These are informative words. And recall that we have 2,000 randomly selected nouns. Okay, not all the words are informative. Just to conclude, I would like to leave the picture at the top with you, that showing that we propose a fast method that takes in two collections of samples and produce a meaningful feature for distinguishing the two sets. And we have Python code available, and thanks for your attention.
In the definition of your witness function, you were looking at the difference between the mean embeddings. But if you want to distinguish distributions, I would expect to look at the likelihood ratio. So why are you looking at the difference instead of the ratio between these two mean embeddings?
So the likelihood ratio, you mean do you need to construct a parametric models for that?
No, just so the ratio of the mean embeddings instead of the difference in the witness
ratio
function.
Of mean. Oh, interesting. Okay, we haven't thought about that. I think this is just, I guess this is just another way to do it. And we have a consistency result as well. Actually, I didn't mention, but the test performed in this way is consistent, meaning that it will eventually distinguish P and Q if they differ.
Okay.
Thanks.
Hi. What is the influence of the kernel actually in this method? I mean, because I think this example you use a Gaussian kernel,
right.
Have you studied the impact of the kernel actually in this test?
I see. The theoretical requirements for the method to be consistent, we have two conditions basically. The first one is that the kernel has to be characteristic. And this is a technical term, but the second condition is the kernel has to be an analytic function. And that's why we use Gaussian kernel, because it satisfies both. But certainly in practice, you can do much better than this. For example, you might consider transforming your data points with a deep neural net before you feed to this Gaussian kernel. That is a possibility as well.
Thanks.
Hello.
Me?
On your right?
All right.
Right.
So hi.
So essentially, it seems like you're doing density estimation and then taking the difference of those densities, right?
Right.
So my question is, A, how do you choose the kernel width,
Okay.
And then B, how do you deal with the curse of dimensionality that it's inherent to this type of density estimation?
Right. Okay, there are two questions. Let me answer the width question first. We choose the Gaussian width in the same way that we choose all the features, which is to maximize the test power here. So I put that we choose all the features to increase the lower bound on the test power, but actually we also choose the Gaussian width as well. Okay, that's an answer to your second question. So the first question is, I think this is not a density estimator actually, even though the mathematical formula looks the same. In one sense, it is not density estimator, because if it is so, then as you observe more and more samples, you would need to decrease the width just to be able to capture the density function. But to be able to do this test, you don't need to do so. To do this test, we only need to care about distinguishability, and there is one appropriate width that doesn't need to go to zero as you increase the sample size. I think that's one difference between the two. Thanks.
Hello. Hi. On your right, I have a question.
Right.
Thanks for the interesting talk. And just on this slide that you have a variance of V.
Okay.
So if I understand correctly, are you going to estimate that variance?
this variance is actually very simple, and I didn't show the formula just to keep it simple, but actually I can show it as well. Just look at this one, the one where the mouse is. This is actually that variance term. So it's just the variance of the kernel, and you can estimate this empirically. It is very simple.
So does the quality of such estimation affect the performance of the algorithm by much? Or so can you comment a little bit on the estimation of that variance?
We didn't see any problem with this unless you use a high number of J, which I didn't mention at all. But in the case that J is high, which is not recommended, this is not the purpose of the test. But when J is more than one, you will get a matrix, a covariance matrix instead. And if J is too large, like say almost reaching the sample size, then you run into estimation inaccuracy. But then that doesn't happen in practice, because in practice, if you use J equals say 1 or 5. So.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hi, on your right, too.
Right.
Thanks for the talk. So one question, some people have been using the MMD test to train a generative model, you know, to like in order to learn a distribution P via this distribution Q. I was wondering if you've tried it and if you think that would be possible, because you would have not only to identify the relevant features, but at the same time also learn the distribution Q.
Right. So I guess you are asking about, like, say, model criticism, like learning generative model.
Yeah.
There is a possibility of this, and as I said earlier, that you can use a deep net to do this. And if you want to learn more, actually, Arthur Gretton will speak about this at, I think, workshop on adversarial learning, if you are interested in.
Of course. But I was wondering if you tried it or if
not
you
yet.
Thought about it. Not yet. Okay.
Not yet, right.
Not
but
yet.
We are starting to work on this. Right.
Yeah, because that would fasten the training of the generative model.
Right.
The optimization is smooth. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
One last question. Hi, thanks for the talk. I was curious if you had thought about testing multiple groups, and if so, in that case, would the hypotheses be
You mean M-sample test or something?
Yeah, like K-samples, whether there's a distinguishing feature among them.
Right, it is. I think this is a natural generalization, but we thought about it, but we haven't explored this direction yet. But
thank you.